Lost Fanboys, episode 40. Bienvenidos and welcome to Los Fanboys, the official movie and TV podcast of LRM Online, a.k.a. Latino Review Media. We are officially middle-aged. This is our 40th edition of the podcast. You are currently listening to one not-quite-yet middle-aged motherfucker in myself, Mario Francisco Robles, who's joined by an actual middle-aged motherfucker in Kelvin Chavez.
What's cracking?
And one, I don't even know what you count as, Jammer, but are you a millennial?
I mean, yeah, you are too, aren't you?
I don't know. Is 33 too old to be a millennial?
I think 33 is right on the edge of millennial.
I'm like on the edge?
Yeah.
All right. How old are you again?
I'm 28.
He's millennial.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I'm definitely millennial. I'm definitely millennial. Yeah, yeah.
Fucking, I hate you. Even though I guess that means I partially hate myself because apparently I'm on the cusp. Mm-hmm. So that's Jammer there in case you didn't notice. Yo. And, you know, so we've got a lot of Star Wars stuff to talk about today because Rogue One is looming on the horizon and there's been all kinds of interesting tidbits falling off of the Lucasfilm tree. Lots of people have been shaking that tree, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, Jammer, how do you want to start us off today, our crossing guard?
Well, per usual, we got to talk about some of our listener stuff. We're going to start with our reviews, because we've been getting more and more, and we love getting reviews for you guys on iTunes. So if you're a fan of this podcast, please go to iTunes, search us on iTunes, Los Fanboys Podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and give us a nice little review. We will read it aloud on the podcast. So we have a new review as of last week, and Mario, would you like to read that?
I would love to. This one's short and sweet and doesn't have any obscure references, or it doesn't make fun of Jammer. So, you know, that part's unfortunate.
And it doesn't ignore Mario.
Like
it. Well, it does ignore
And it doesn't
Mario,
ignore me. No, but... well, it just kind of, you know, gives us all equal props in an unspecific way.
Yeah.
So the name of it, by the way, the user is RickP1966, iTunes user, says, knowledgeable and entertaining, 5 stars. He wrote, I really enjoy listening to the guys interact, and I appreciate the insider knowledge they bring to the table. Very fun to listen to. So there we go, another rave review.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Fanboys. Thank you, Rick.
Thank
It'd be
you.
Funny if Rick is like Rick Perry, the governor of Texas or whatever.
We would. That's very random, but yes, that would be very random. That'd be weird.
All right, and then we have some other reader interactive stuff, right? We got some questions of the week answers, correct?
Yeah, last week we had the question is because we had this whole discussion coming out of it where you seem to be of the opinion that you seem to think that the signs were pointing to WB panicking over the past, you know, 6 months or however long it took, and trying to retroactively make Fantastic Beasts a Potter-centric story. And so pretty much that was sort of the question is Fantastic Beasts performing as well as WB would like, and do you think they're shifting gears on the story to make it more Potter-centric? So that was the question of the week. So what were some of the responses to this question, Mario?
Well, there was one fella, Danny Hernandez, who just wanted to make clear that he thinks Fantastic Beasts is performing just fine. He says he always thought it would be Potter-centric since Grindelwald's arc was in it. Aaron Virola, let's see. Oh, this is just Aaron. Aaron seems to think there's going to be video at some point of me dropping an elbow on Jammer since Jammer pissed all over my epiphany last week.
I did. You took forever to fucking get to it. You kept
it
clarifying.
It was so worth it.
Yeah.
To most of us. Then Aaron did follow that up by saying that he always assumed that Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them was always meant to tie into the larger Potterverse. It was all always going to be a world-building exercise. So he doesn't think it has anything to do with Warner Brothers trying to cram some more stuff in there to make the sequel more profitable. And then we actually have an old response from Dan Barley, who I called out last week.
Yeah,
Dan Barley, my new Twitter friend. He, you know, 2 weeks ago we had asked a question about what people thought about the Beauty and the Beast trailer, and he whet our appetite, but didn't actually answer the question. So this time, he answered the question. He put, "My apologies, gents. Definitely got a cosplay vibe from the Beauty and the Beast trailer. A little concerning, but willing to overlook for now. P.S. CGI is a little wonky. Hopefully it's just the trailer. Also, does anyone else think the Beast looks too much like a goat?"
I hear a lot of people saying that.
I didn't get the goat thing.
Like, I've listened to other people. I've checked online. Everyone seems to be comparing him to a goat. It's because of the way his horns are pointing a specific way. Yeah. So I guess it's goat-like. That never crossed my mind, but I guess I could see it now.
Yeah. Although he did seem to back up Kelvin's concerns about the CGI, which, again, didn't seem to bother you or I, right, Joseph?
No, it didn't bother me at all. I thought it was fine.
Apparently we're in the minority. A lot of people have said Kelvin was right, so damn it. Again. I hate it when Kelvin's right.
Me too.
Myself too.
And then Dan shifted gears, and he gave a thoughtful response to last week's question, which was about Fantastic Beasts. He said WB, Warner Brothers, needs to check themselves before they wreck themselves with these forecasts. Definitely feels like panic behind the scenes to me. P.S. They better not shift all focus to Grindeldor. Just made that up. That's what he put. Grindeldor. I really liked Newt's character. Need to see more of him. So he sounds concerned about last week's comments that Newt Scamander was going to suddenly take a back seat and it was going to become more of a Dumbledore Grindelwald show moving forward. Aaron, that was a separate aside. Doesn't have to do with the question of the week. Tavo Borrego, another frequent listener, chimed in that Fantastic Beasts was a great standalone movie. Not really surprised by Warner Brothers' decision to go with a more Potter-centric story. And last thing is Danny Hernandez, which is at Woosh Danny H. Seems to be appealing. He said Fantastic Beasts seems to be appealing to its core and casuals as it stayed competitive with Moana Thanksgiving weekend. So he thinks Fantastic Beasts is doing just fine.
And actually, that's a perfect transition to the box office.
Which saw
Moana go head to head with Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And both films had a pretty great weekend. I know the big numbers for Moana were around $80 million for the whole weekend, for like Wednesday through Sunday. The weekend gross was around $56 million. For comparison, mm-hmm. I think Frozen was around $75 million, and that ended up hitting it pretty big. Also, for comparison, last year The Good Dinosaur came out. That did not hit very well at all. That kind of ended up, I wouldn't call it a flop, but it didn't end up doing well at all. But all signs are pointing to Moana actually doing pretty solid on the whole. I'm thinking, at the end of the day, it'll definitely break $750 million, and maybe even crack $1 billion if it's lucky. And it's looking on track to do pretty well, especially since there's not really going to be another big movie until Rogue One hits on December 16th. So it has a few weeks to reign at the box office. So that hit number one with $56 million, not including the whole Thanksgiving weekend, which was 82.
And mind you, by the way, this is just something I'm curious about.
Yeah,
it opened like Tuesday
night.
Tuesday night. Yeah, Tuesday evening. They were already like, it had like a record Tuesday showing, and then I know I saw it on Wednesday. So in terms of that weekend gross, I'm like, you know, it was somewhat, you know, diluted by all those extra days. So I just kind of want to point that out, because right now the film stands worldwide. It's already almost at $100 million worldwide. It's 82 mil here domestic, with another 17 mil foreign. So that just goes to show you, it's at almost, you know, 82 domestic. Meanwhile, only 56 of that came from the actual weekend, because it made a bunch of money on those other days.
Right. Coming in second, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, not surprising there. What is surprising was how fucking great the movie did. Like, it kind of did amazing. It only dropped 39.4%.
Unbelievable.
For comparison, I think the only Harry Potter film to drop less was like the first one. And I think that may have had like a 30-something percent or 34% drop. And I think its second weekend for Fantastic Beasts performed better than three or four of the Harry Potter films of the past, all of which grossed higher.
Yeah.
their first weekend. So, like, not only did it have a less drop, but it actually, on its second weekend, had better, full, like, just straight numbers than about around half of the Harry Potter films, which is a huge deal, especially since it had a kind of a lukewarm beginning with $75 million.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because a lot of those Potter films were very front-loaded, and it looks like this is going to have a different sort of cycle at the box office. A lot of those Potter films, like especially like the latter few, they opened huge and then like you know dropped really quickly the following week.
Yeah,
this one, you know, it opened pretty good, and it looks like that's actually going to benefit it because now it's just going to maybe slowly go down.
Yeah, like, I mean, Moana and Fantastic Beasts, like I said, they have the next few weeks to themselves. They can kind of just...
Yeah,
it's going to be one or the other, Moana or Fantastic Beasts. Like, I personally did not get a chance to see Moana last week as much as I wanted to because of family stuff, you know, Thanksgiving and all that.
Yeah.
But this coming weekend, I'm really hoping to check it out. I'll be one of the people checking it out in the coming weeks as well. I'll probably see Fantastic Beasts again just to make sure that I like it because I'm still kind of deciding on that film as to where I stand. As of right now, I think I would rate it like a B minus, and I kind of want to see where it holds up on a second viewing for me. And at number three, actually, Kelvin, do you have any comments on this so far?
No. That's the Potter universe, boy. It's going to do well.
Yeah.
You know?
At number three, you have Doctor Strange hanging in there with $13 million. Obviously, that's a big, you know, 20, 30. So it's a $30 plus million difference between Fantastic Beasts and Doctor Strange, but it's still hanging in there. It hit a milestone recently.
Yes, it did.
It... not only passed $600 million worldwide in box office gross, but it also has become the highest grossing individual character launchpad, you know, beating out Iron Man, which was, you know, came out back in 2008 and has held that position for a long time. It had, like, the most auspicious opening for any character ever. And that's a huge deal. The only one it really has to be at this point as far as... I guess launch pads is the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is not counted here because it, you know, it's a group of characters and not just one. So,
Is that only for Marvel or for?
That's for Marvel. Yeah. In terms of out of all 14 MCU movies, in terms of the ones that introduced a new single character, like Captain America, Iron Man, Ant-Man, Thor, all those, Incredible Hulk, Doctor Strange has officially beaten all of them.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it is worth noting that this isn't entirely accurate. I actually was looking around, poking around Box Office Mojo for specific numbers, but, you know, they seem to have an emphasis on domestic, which is unfortunate. But domestically, Doctor Strange is number 11 in the superhero origin film in general, behind the likes of Spider-Man, Deadpool, Guardians, Suicide Squad, Iron Man, Man of Steel, Amazing Spider-Man, Batman, Big Hero 6, which is counted, I guess, and Batman Begins. But... at the end of the day, a lot of those films, or a few of those films at least, came out when domestic was a bigger deal than it is now. So it's not entirely accurate.
But that's pretty crazy. The Doctor Strange movie, I remember months ago saying, like, I'm so skeptical about this movie. And now here it sits at $617 million worldwide. Like, holy shit.
I mean, Marvel, they can't do any wrong. Ant-Man, everyone thought it was going to fail. Guardians, a lot of people thought it was going to fail. Like... people, they keep subverting people's expectations and flipping them on their heads. So good for them. Good on them. I'm hoping that they continue their success. You know, I love good movies. Who doesn't love good movies?
Yeah. But now let's get to the big disappointment in this week's top five.
Allied.
Rules don't apply. Holy shit.
Yeah, Rules Don't Apply didn't do very well. But I mean, I didn't expect it to do very well. Rules Don't Apply, for those who don't know, and I'm expecting a lot of you don't, is the Warren Beatty-directed film starring Lily Collins and Alden Ehrenreich, the guy who's going to play Han Solo. And it follows their interaction with fucking plain dude. What's his name?
Howard Hughes.
Rich billionaire Howard Hughes, crazy eccentric guy, who's also played by Warren Beatty. Their interaction with him is kind of, I think, a romance comedy. I didn't check it out myself. I've heard good things, but yeah, it made $2.17 million, coming in really low at the box office at number 12, which is disappointing, but I didn't expect anything more out of that movie. Like, I didn't see it anywhere. So I find it
the worst opening in 2016.
I find it hard to call it a disappointment. They didn't push that fucker at all. Like, they didn't push it. I don't know what they were expecting.
I haven't seen a single commercial for that thing.
I saw every commercial for it all the time on television.
Really?
Yeah, they were pushing the shit out of it. NBA games.
Wow.
When you're watching,
talk about
it. Not on the shows I watch.
Talk about a studio not knowing.
I was watching CW a lot, and they had it on that. I mean, dude, they had it like 2 weeks prior when they had the David Blaine special. They had it on that. So, you know, I'm shocked that, you know, I'm shocked that it went that far down. You know, it was that low of a number. I figured it'll be like number 7 or number 8, but not like that. And it's like the worst opening for a movie in 2016.
Well, I'm impressive. Still more shocked by number 4 on the list, which Jammer was getting to. That one for me is far more surprising than
Allied.
Rules Don't Apply. Yeah.
Yeah, Allied, that was the Marion Cotillard film directed by Robert Zemeckis. This is his second. I guess this is a flop. I would say this is a flop. It's made $27 million so far on an $85 million budget. Actually, could you call it a flop?
I mean, I don't know.
The reviews have been pretty rough. And you've got freaking Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard over the, you know, on the marquee with Robert Zemeckis, who had, you know, freaking Back to the Future and Castaway and all this other stuff. I think a movie like that, with that sort of star power and everything involved, opening at 12 mil is pretty sad.
It's sad. I wouldn't call it.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't
help also all that scandal that they had behind the closed door. So,
yeah.
Oh, you mean regarding the freaking TMZ shit?
Well,
which is funny because that sort of scandal stuff helped Mr. and Mrs. Smith when the big word was that he was shagging Angelina Jolie on the set. And then
that was to some people, that was like, oh shit, they hooked up. But in this case, you know, that whole negative thing about him beating up his kid and beating her up. So that's a negative.
Shit. I didn't hear that part of it.
Yeah, I don't really know much about that part. But to me,
that's what I'm talking about. I think that's pretty much what I heard the final. And the rumors that he was having an affair with the co-star, and she ended up saying that it wasn't true, and then she ended up being pregnant, but she says that it's not Brad Pitt's.
Oh, God.
It's somebody else. So all that negative vibe, in my opinion, probably hurt the film.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think I ever heard anyone saying, I'm not going to see Allied because of that. I don't think anybody knew Allied was coming
out. I mean, no, you're right on that sense, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the reasons.
Right. Well, that is disappointing. Robert Zemeckis needs to get his shit together. I mean, nothing against him, but yeah, he's had two disappointing films in a row. I know the other one, The Walk, last year that came out with Joseph Gordon-Levitt didn't perform as much as people wanted it to. But, you know, still a talented director. I look forward to every single project he does. And moving on to number 5, Arrival, which... You know, still doing okay. Still doing pretty good, I guess I would say. It coming in with an okay $11.4 million in this third weekend? Is it third or fourth weekend? I'm not sure at this point. And it has...
I think it's three weekends.
Three weekends, which actually, when you think about it, the opening weekend at $24 million, it already coming in or still coming in at $11 million. That's actually pretty solid. So kudos to that film for sure. And right now it's made worldwide $93.4 million. Off its $47 million budget. So it's made back its budget, not necessarily its marketing just yet, depending on where it stands. But, you know, it's going to be close to making money, and it will definitely make money off of its home release. So I would consider this one a success, mostly because the film itself was such a great film that it was worth making, even if it's not super profitable.
Yeah, to me, I would consider it a win if I'm Paramount because, you know, at this point, it's literally, like you said, like by conventional standards, it's pretty much it's broken even because it's just under 94 and 94 is exactly 47 doubled. If you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the production budget was 47 and they always say it has to double its budget to break even. That means 94 mil.
They'll
just about 94 mil.
It'll have to make a bit more to take into account the cut from the theater chains. So taking that into account, they have to do a little bit more to be profitable. But considering their streak so far, they seem to be doing inching along pretty well. I have little doubt that they'll actually make a little bit of money off of this one. But the big question will come award season if they'll be able
to milk it some more. That's what I was saying. Like even at this fairly early stage, 3 weeks in, this little, you know, kind of moderately budgeted prestige project has more or less it's on the cusp of breaking even. And once the award season comes into play, and I'm sure this thing will get some, you know, some consideration, that's where it's going to really now become a little bit of a gravy train, I think.
And it only dropped 5.6% from last weekend. And that's, you know, it good staying power, good word of mouth, even though it has that B cinema score, people seem to be coming out, enough people, to keep it in the top five for this week. I can't imagine it'll stay. I don't know what comes out this weekend. Do you know off the top of your head what comes out this weekend?
I do not.
Just some dumb Incarnate, that horror movie.
Okay. Well, the thing is, horror movies, they may they kind of steal away thunder quite a bit. They actually
it's really nothing.
Well.
Yeah, it's true. Incarnate, that Natalie Portman Jackie movie.
Okay.
Man Down, Things to Come, which is looks like a foreign film, and The Eyes of My Mother. So a bunch of shit I never heard of, and Jackie.
Okay. So maybe this top five will stay the same, give or take a little bit. Like maybe the horror movie will, you know, pop in at number three or maybe even two. I don't think it's going to break out Moana or anything. But if not, you know, you still have mostly the same top five, I would say.
Yeah, and it's just that movie is coming out, the horror movies, from the same director who did San Andreas and some other stuff.
You know, say what you will about San Andreas, it was fucking entertaining. I enjoyed myself watching that movie, even though it was the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. Okay. Anyone else have any last words to say about the box office?
Well, yeah, I should say while we're on the subject, since Moana was the number one movie this week at the box office, I did see it.
How was it?
And I really liked it a lot. Interestingly enough, the last two kids movies I've gone to were Moana and Kubo and the Two Strings. And I actually found a lot of similarities between them in terms of like their themes and sort of the approach they took towards the story. And to me, it almost felt like Moana was like the more like crowd pleasing, easier to swallow version of Kubo and the Two Strings, because we know Kubo didn't really do so well when it came out. A lot of people didn't think that the film got a fair shake. And meanwhile, Disney kind of basically, you know, covered very similar territory, but did it with that sort of signature Disney little magic wand of theirs. And this was, this is going to be a huge hit.
Was it actually the film itself that was easier to swallow, or was it just the marketing?
I think the film itself is definitely a lot more, you know, like with the music and the amazing animation and the overall lighter touch. You know, Kubo was a little headier, was a little more, geared towards the parents in the crowd, not just the kids. But thematically, there's a lot of little parallels there, which is funny to me. You know, they both sort of tackle mythological themes and honoring your ancestors and finding your destiny and a lot of very similar themes in the two movies. But one was like the nice little Disney version, and one was the more, grown-up version. And obviously, the Disney version is the one that's going to end up connecting with audiences this year.
You know what's interesting for me? Oh, you're not done yet? Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I also cried like a little bitch at one point. So
dude, I cried like a little bitch in every fucking animated movie, almost every animated movie. They hit my heartstrings pretty hard, especially Toy Story 3. I'll never forget that movie. Good Lord.
I never saw it. I have to.
You really? Have to see it. Yeah. I sobbed like a little bitch. Like, not even funny.
Yeah, like I was like ugly man crying.
Yeah.
And then my daughter turned towards me and I had to like, honey, I just sneezed. I'm fine.
Yeah. If
I mean, stepping away from the Disney anime, there's one movie that I got to see over the weekend. It was only in four theaters and it didn't make the box room. And you try to hold it and until you hear people and you're like, fuck.
What movie was it? Can you say?
Lion.
Lion?
It's a really good fucking movie. Incredible acting by Dave Patel. You know?
All right. I got to check that out.
It's in the Paris Theater in New York.
Okay.
It's only like in four theaters, Paris and the Angelica Theater. But
Jeff Patel. I thought you said Dave Patel. I'm like, who the hell is Dave Patel?
Dave Patel, the stand-up comedian?
And Rooney Mara and Nicole Kidman. So three really good actors.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't be surprised if Nicole Kidman gets an Oscar nod. Movie was really, really good. And bring tissues. They create like boxes of tissues.
All right.
Really quick, switching back to Moana really quick. How was the music for that? Because I know obviously sort of the big thing from that is
Lin-Manuel Miranda
doing the music for that. But I think it's interesting how he actually had to audition for that, because this was before Hamilton really hit it big. that he actually secured this role. So that's cool. It kind of comes almost, I would say, maybe at an inopportune time for him. Great opportune time for Disney, but for him, I almost feel like he has like a risk of overexposure at this point. So I don't know. We'll see how that goes. Yeah. But how was the music?
I really liked the music. I really did. That was actually one of the things that caught me. Like there are one or two really powerful songs in there that are sung by the girl who plays Moana. And then, you know, Dwayne Johnson's number is pretty fun, too. And I was freaking singing that for a few days.
Yeah, they just posted that online, actually. You can check it out.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, the music was very good. And it definitely has that Lin-Manuel feel. Even in Dwayne Johnson's one, you hear him sort of rapping through it. And if you're familiar with Miranda's, style, you know, I've seen In the Heights and I've listened to Hamilton. And like, oh, yeah, that's definitely, you know, that's his sensibility right there. And so you could hear the sort of signature Miranda sort of vibe. But overall, I thought the music was very good. And I was blasting that shit on Spotify and dancing around with my kids a few days later. And this song this movie definitely has its Let It Go. Because I was wondering if it was going to have that. Because all these Disney movies always have like the big song that crosses over into the mainstream. And Frozen had Let It Go. So the whole movie, I'm like, when is the Let It Go going to happen? Mm-hmm. And it actually happens fairly early into the movie. So there is a Let It Go. And it actually is pretty damn good. And Alicia Cara is the one who recorded the radio version of it that you'll probably hear as the movie continues to play in theaters and the song probably ends up becoming a hit. So you're going to hear Alicia Cara's version on the radio soon, just like there was Demi Lovato's version of Let It Go when Frozen came out.
Yep. All right. Well, any last words on this movie or on the box office or anything else related?
Nah, let's move on.
Mario. There's been a lot of speculation as to when Star Wars Episode 8 will actually get a trailer. The currently untitled Star Wars Episode 8, as you know, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, the first spinoff, and what Disney hopes is, you know, many, many spinoffs, or Lucasfilm hopes, is coming out. And with that, everyone is kind of thinking, when's the next trailer going to hit for the next movie? Mario, what do they have to say about this?
Well, here's what's interesting. I should preface this by saying that the source for this rumor is interesting to me because he's someone I've never heard of, and he seems to like just be a guy in Long Island with a webcam. His name is Mike Zero. He's a YouTube guy, and he's got, you know, like 56,000 subscribers when I checked yesterday. But for whatever reason, he seems to like know stuff. I don't know why, but a lot of people are running with his last two reveals. Because in the same video, he posted about a line of dialogue that Luke Skywalker supposedly will be saying in the trailer. And he revealed when he thinks the trailer is going to be coming out. Mm-hmm. And he spoke about having like four different sources, two of which he trusts, two of which he does not, who all seem to verify this information. And I'm watching the webcam and I'm like, you're just some dude in your living room. What are you talking about sources? Like, so I don't know who this Mike Zero guy is, but a lot of people are running with his information right now, these last 24 hours. So I want to just sort of put that out there first. But according to Mike Zero, the trailer is for episode 8 will be coming out in quarter 1 of next year, which means some point in, you know, January through March of next year. And then, you know, when you do some digging into that, you look, you know, what Disney movies are coming out in that time, because Disney owns Lucasfilm, and typically, you know, trailers get attached to movies that come from the same parent company because they're trying to create some sort of synergy there. Well, the only movie coming out in quarter one from Disney is Beauty and the Beast. So now basically it looks like, you know, if this is all to be trusted and there isn't going to be a trailer with Rogue One, then you can probably it's a safe bet that when Beauty and the Beast comes out, which I think is at the tail end of March.
March 17th.
That's when March 17th. That week is when we'll get to finally see episode 8. And what was interesting about that is while I was researching it, I was looking at the dates of, other things, like when The Force Awakens came out and how that compares to this. And it's like by this time in The Force Awakens in The Force Awakens life, you know, cycle, we already knew it was going to be called The Force Awakens, and we'd already had our first teaser. So I'm just curious why we still don't know a title for this, and they're holding off on the trailer for, you know, substantially longer than they did for Episode 7.
They don't want to cannibalize enthusiasm for Rogue One, I'm imagining.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it both ways. I could see it like cannibalizing it, or like, hey, Rogue One is where all your Star Wars fans are going to be. Get them a fucking teaser for Rogue One. You know, like, I don't
which
know.
Which would be the in the business side, a smart idea.
Would it be?
Yeah, like, that's what it sounds like to me.
Because,
yeah,
like, let's be, no, I don't know if it would be, because think about it. It's not like you could only see this trailer if you go to Rogue One. Like, it's going to pop up online. They're going to put it online.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're not going to want to necessarily, you're not going to have to see Rogue One in order to see the trailer. And yeah, because of that, it's like, there really is no benefit, because
I couldn't disagree more.
Well, I mean, there's no real benefit, because Kelvin. If maybe because if I'm someone, if I'm Joe Schmo who doesn't know much about movies, and I see a trailer for Episode 8, I go, oh, wait a second, this is not the Star Wars movie that's coming out. You know, fuck that Star Wars movie. I'll wait for the other one.
Okay. You know what? I could see that. I could see that.
So,
and I also can see that too. But there's also a flip side to that. You can also have the trailer attached to, let's say, Rogue One, and only show it the entire week. You know, the weekend that it comes out, and the only way you can see it is through there.
That shit doesn't work.
They've done that before.
When?
For the prequels.
That was like decades ago, dude. That was like a decade ago. It doesn't work anymore.
They do it like that. They did do it like that.
That doesn't work this day and age.
It won't work this day and age because of the fact that they'll go and bootleg it. You know, they did that with Inception. The only time that you saw the first Inception trailer was in the theater. No one knew about it until Monday morning. Boom, they released it.
Kelvin, you know? Or Mario, you're going to say something?
No, I actually think that's an interesting point there, Jammer. I hadn't thought of that. That if they do release it, and suddenly now there's commercials and trailers for both Episode 8 and Rogue One, because they're going to continue to promote Rogue One even once it comes out, it's going to get confusing.
Yeah.
So maybe they should hold off, which is fine. But so they're going to hold off, and they're going to wait until March. So I guess that part has an explanation. But how do you guys feel about the fact that by this point in the timeline, we already knew, you know, Episode 7's name?
Episode 7, I think, was a completely different ball of wax. This was a decade since we'd had a Star Wars movie. We knew enthusiasm was going to continue. We're at the stage right now where we get a Star Wars movie every year. And we're coming up on one release. There's another release pending. And it's just, there's a lot of saturation of Star Wars, so people aren't as hungry for that information, and they're maybe not as likely to remember that scrap of information you threw them before. It's all about just banking on enthusiasm, and I don't think Disney and Lucasfilm can necessarily bank on the fact that people are going to keep their enthusiasm for Episode 8 as they did with 7.
I agree.
Yeah. So that's what I think with that. But that being said, I just want to look at this at the other angle that you guys were, where Rogue One, I could also see the argument that by having the trailer, you sort of capitalize on enthusiasm. You know, you basically say like, oh, I'm excited for Episode 8. The closest thing I'll get is Rogue One, and they'll go check that out. So I guess it just depends on what Disney is banking on. But I guess with the idea of not releasing it with Rogue One is that they don't want to create brand confusion at this point when the Star Wars story brand is still in its infancy.
And I think they also want to keep Rogue One, like they've been saying before, a standalone, you know?
Yeah.
Separate from the original trilogy. And the fact that they don't probably have a name yet is another reason why there's no trailer attached to Rogue One.
You don't think they have a name at all?
I mean, they probably do, but I don't think they want to announce it just yet.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So with that, Mario, with Kelvin kind of touching on the main saga with his last comment, let's talk about Star Wars, the main saga, you know, episodes 1 through 9, potentially coming to a close. Mario, you posted up something a few days back about that. What did you have to say?
Yeah, Kathleen Kennedy was having a conversation with Entertainment Weekly, and she basically revealed that you know, right now they have a lot of different ways they can go, but that in January they're going to be having a meeting to basically, you know, because figure by January they're going to know what Rogue One was. And based on the success of Rogue One, that's sort of what they're going to decide upon. They're going to figure out, do we continue with the main saga with, you know, episodes, 10, 11, 12? Or do we just move to a standalone only model? And so that seems to be, you know, it's something they're considering, basically, you know, moving away from the episodes and doing movies that are like Rogue One, that are like the Han Solo movie, that are like the rumored Boba Fett movie.
Which we'll get to later, hint, hint.
Yeah. So, you know, that's interesting that, you know, because when all this was first announced, you know, the whole thing was Disney bought Lucasfilm and they're making a new trilogy. And, oh, yeah, they're going to mix in some standalones there because they want to explore new stuff. But obviously the emphasis was on the new trilogy. And now we're moving into a phase of things where now we're looking at the post-trilogy and, you know, that uncertain future. So it's interesting. I'd love to be a fly on the wall when those meetings at Lucasfilm take place in January.
It's so interesting because I kind of see where they're coming from, and I could see where these films could potentially go, because instead of having a saga that you have to stick to, you know, a general through line, you can pretty much start branching off. These won't just be spin-off standalones anymore. You could potentially go off into like an Obi-Wan trilogy or a trilogy spin-off. You know, you don't have to restrict yourself to standalones at that point, and it becomes almost more like the Marvel universe in a way, which could both be good and bad depending on your perspective, depending on if you want two universes like that. Or if we continue with the saga, that's still sort of our main through line and everything else kind of exists outside of it. Maybe we could get a trilogy of films within that, maybe not, maybe they could all be standalones. There are just so many endless possibilities with this, and I don't personally know which way I want it to go. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, Kelvin, what would your vote be? Would you want them to continue the Skywalker saga and basically initiate episodes 10, 11, and 12? Or would you like them to move to like a standalone only model where it's just, you know, these unique little sub franchises and standalone stories within that galaxy far, far away?
Well, I mean, Disney bought this for what? Billions of dollars? What, $5
billion? Like $4 billion, something like that, yeah.
$4 billion. So this is their baby. So I think that they should. I think that they would hold out, like I think Jammer was saying, to see what Rogue One does.
No. And listen, I'm asking you your preference. What would
like to
see?
I would like for them to end it and start something new.
Okay.
So, you know, do you mean like create a whole new saga? Like, for example, would you like to see episodes 10, 11, 12 and then go off something different? Or would you just like to see the end of the whole episodic aspect and then just do
the whole episodic aspect, start something new?
Okay.
No?
Interesting. All right. Well, that's interesting. I don't know what I want. What do you want, Mario?
Exactly. But, you know, they're going to come up with some ideas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you continue it without Luke and just follow Rey and whoever else. And so
I'm tempted to just say, let's end it at 9. You know, I feel like we can't keep going back to that well with the Skywalkers, you know?
Exactly.
So I feel like I'd be very happy if 9 is the end of the episodic saga. And then we start like a new trilogy that isn't have to do with episode 1 or 2 or 3, but imagine just like a whole new thing, like a episodes 1, 2, and 3 of a Knights of the Old Republic.
That's what I'm saying.
You know what I mean? So like, you know, maybe not standalones where each movie is literally just a one-off. Maybe do other trilogies, but not that, you know, that have nothing to do with the Skywalker timeline.
Yeah, and I guess one of the main things that, you know, I've mentioned this before, how movies are getting increasingly TV-like, and one staple of TV is that nobody has a happy ending ever. Like, things just keep happening. People keep dying. Yeah. You may, like, all the shit goes wrong with your life in between seasons or during a season. So it's like, even if they end a season on a happy note, chances are next season you're not going to be happy, and it's kind of like a cycle. And we kind of saw that with The Force Awakens when, spoiler alert, Han Solo died. And, like, at what point does it just become exhausting to watch this person's life or this whole lineage of people constantly go through ups and downs? It almost becomes, like, pointless or nihilistic in a way, where it's just like there's no saving anything. Like, they're just prolonging the inevitable.
Yeah. So it'd be nice if in episode 9, they just wrap it up with a nice little bow, give them the happy ending, and move the fuck on.
Pretty much.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, I could probably, no matter what they say, I feel like I'd be on board with it. That being mm-hmm. said.
They can,
like,
do no wrong.
As long as
they've got good writers and directors involved. You know, obviously, I'm a huge Star Wars geek, and I'll continue watching them no matter what. But my gut says, let's end this current continuity at 9 and start exploring entirely new territory after that.
Yeah.
Or, since they did buy Lucasfilm, Lucasfilm is not only Star Wars. They should focus now on Indiana Jones.
Well, I don't think they should stop making Star Wars movies. There's no reason for them to do that. They could expand into doing Indiana Jones as well. Yeah. Which I think they're planning on doing, or they've been talking about it for a bit. And we'll see how far that actually goes. The problem with that one is they seem to really be focusing on Steven Spielberg and really hinging their entire efforts around him, which could be, you know, for good or bad, depending on what you think.
They're only getting older.
Yep. Okay. This is not the last Star Wars news. We have a couple more. The next one has to do with Obi-Wan. I mentioned it slightly earlier on. The big question is, why haven't we seen any news of an Obi-Wan spinoff? Like, we've heard news about, obviously, Rogue One, a Han Solo spinoff, which you would think is the real challenging one that they would, you know, push off as long as possible. We heard recent news about Boba Fett, which we'll talk about later. But no real solid concrete news about Obi-Wan getting a spinoff movie. I've heard rumors about many, many people pitching to Lucasfilm, but they really haven't acted on it. They haven't announced anything. Why is that? Well, it's because we have rumors that Lucasfilm is not done yet with Obi-Wan in the main saga. This comes from an Entertainment Weekly writer who was on a guest on a podcast whose name escapes me. What was it called? It was Rebel Force Radio. And he said, I heard rumors that one reason they haven't moved sooner on Obi-Wan is that they're not done with him yet in the saga films. So I wouldn't be surprised to see an Obi-Wan thing happen beyond episode 9. So what he's saying is, Obi-Wan may come back in episodes 8 or 9, and then once that is done, we may get, you know, an Obi-Wan trilogy, seeing him hanging out on Tatooine for doing whatever stuff.
They seem to be against the idea of having two different versions of the same character running at once. So that's why, like, they're doing Han Solo now that Han Solo was killed off. Spoiler alert!
Yeah.
In episode 7. So, you know, so since they don't want that, and it's heavily implied now that Obi-Wan is going to factor in to 8 or 9, or both, that seems to be the explanation. That is the big holdup on why there's been no announcement about a Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan movie or series of movies, even though the actor has already said he would love to do it, and fans have been fucking champing at the bit for that for a while now. So, I mean, that makes sense, I guess. You know, if you don't want to have two competing versions of the character or two totally different points in the timeline running at once.
Yeah, what do you think about this, Mario? Or to Mario, Kelvin?
I am Mario. Hey,
look, I've been hearing this whole Obi-Wan spinoffs for like 2 years already. You know, they wanted to do, a while back it was like a Obi-Wan spinoff, then they wanted to do a Boba Fett spinoff, and a Yoda. I think those were the three main movies. And then obviously things changed, and now you got a Rogue One, you got a Han Solo, and then who knows what other third film you're going to see. But, you know, I know that back in 2014, one of the films was set completely on Tatooine, and the other two were Obi-Wan travels everywhere. And the other two films were where Obi-Wan travels elsewhere in the galaxy. I mean, that's what I had heard back in 2014 about the Obi-Wan spinoff film.
Right.
There were supposed to be three films, one set completely on Tatooine, and the other two, his travels in the galaxy. But
that would be fun. That'd be the way to go.
Yeah, shit changes, and they, you know, now they got Rogue One instead. You know,
it makes sense. It makes sense that they'd hold off. I don't think they would want to overexpose Obi-Wan in a couple of different movies. It might be confusing to average moviegoers and just convolute the entire thing. So for them waiting, that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, and what was cool about it was, like, back then, the story was that they were going to have Jin, Qui-Gon Jinn, whatever his name is.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah, he was supposed to be present in those stories. You know, Owen Lars to several characters from the Clone Wars. You know, there was going to be like a flashback of Obi-Wan fighting in the Clone Wars. So it was, you know, I was looking forward to that if it was true that they were going to do a trilogy on the Obi-Wan story.
Wait, so they wouldn't be focusing on Obi-Wan in his, you know, in the 20-year gap between episode 3 and episode 4? It would be like off into old shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that sucks. That would have been awful. I'm happy they didn't do that.
No.
I didn't hear that. Did you hear that, Mario?
No, but I trust Kelvin.
Would you have would you have wanted that, or do you like the idea?
No, and then the next thing you know, like I think after that thing was reported, a few days later, another site actually confirmed the same thing. You know, that Disney was in negotiations with Ewan McGregor for an unknown project. And I don't know what happened. I think it fell apart.
Here's where I'm sort of Captain Buzzkill.
Oh.
No, like, I'm not too wild on it. Like I like Ewan McGregor, and his Obi-Wan was one of the, you know, the bright spots of the prequel trilogy. But I, like, if they do an Obi-Wan movie, I wouldn't want it to become like another like mini trilogy or a little series of movies or whatever. I would just want like maybe one cool standalone story that ends with him getting to Tatooine and setting up what, you know, being old man Obi-Wan in A New Hope.
But it's funny that you say that, because in that trilogy, it was supposed to end as he watches over a maturing Luke Skywalker. That's how it was supposed to, like, supposedly end.
Yeah. I mean, I read something from a reader, a fellow fan the other day that sounded kind of cool. Like, I think it would be cool if in some way he pops up in the Han Solo movie and that sets up his, you know, a single solo Obi-Wan movie. But that's about it.
How would that happen? I mean, I guess if you think about it would be...
Like maybe not even have them interact. Just kind of like... Just have him like a one-off somewhere. I don't know. I read it and I got hit with man, that would be interesting if they have him just kind of show up and do something in the Han Solo movie that sets up, you know, his own movie.
Maybe you should do that. You should do that as a fan question of the week.
Yeah.
Wait. So what would be the question there?
Like, how should they treat Obi-Wan, like, in terms of how would you like to see them handle this Obi-Wan movie? Would you like him to pop up in Han Solo? What point in the timeline would you like to see him exactly? That sort of stuff.
Okay, cool. So
Or you can have another question where we were discussing before this Obi-Wan about the whole trailer thing.
You're going to have to be more specific about when they think it's going to drop?
Yeah. If they think that it should drop with the Rogue One or not.
Oh, I actually like that one better. What do you think, Mario?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so that's the question of the week, which we will repeat at the end of the podcast, is do you think they should drop the Star Wars Episode 8 trailer with Rogue One or not? Okay, so moving on from Obi-Wan, we got some news regarding Boba Fett movie. I'm sorry, it's not happening. We still don't think it's happening as of right now, but it almost happened. It was very close to happening. If you'll recall, Josh Trank, the director of Fantastic Four, was on deck to direct a Star Wars standalone film. It was rumored, but never confirmed, to be a Boba Fett film. And it would have been, if I recall, the second standalone film following Rogue One. Right now, instead, we have the Han Solo movie doing that, taking its place. But we never really knew what the movie was, and it turns out it was indeed, as rumored, a Boba Fett movie. And not only was it going to get made, but they were so close to announcing it that at the Star Wars Celebration, was it last year or the year before? I think it was 2015 was when it happened, where Josh Trank mysteriously fell ill and didn't show up, you know, due to the drama that was happening behind the scenes of Fantastic Four, and I think Disney was getting cold feet on him. At that event, they originally actually had a teaser trailer for Boba Fett announcing it to the public. So we were probably as close as a week or two away from getting that film announced before everything kind of fell through. Mario, what do you think of this new revelation?
I mean, that's interesting that it really got that close, and I wonder what would have been included in that little teaser. I guess it would just would have been like a lot of text and maybe some archival footage.
They should have just like a black screen with all five of his lines from the original trilogy. He's no good to me, dead. And that's it.
And they literally just show the footage of him falling into the Sarlacc pit, but in reverse. He pops out of it this time, and that's it. That's the whole teaser.
Or we start with that shot, and then as he's falling into a pit, it turns into that scene from The Two Towers, where, you know, he's falling, and he starts fighting something as he's going, and ends up, you know, climbing out of the abyss in some crazy way. And then it cuts to black, and it says Boba Fett. A Star Wars story.
Yeah, like, I'm just fascinated by what would have been in that teaser. I mean, otherwise, you know, I've never been like one of those fanboys who's obsessed with Boba Fett and like wanted to find out more about him and was very upset when he died sort of easily or whatever. To me, it was always like, all right, he's got a cool costume and he looks, you know, he seems kind of badass. But at the end of the day, I've never been one of those Star Wars fans who has a very big preoccupation with Boba Fett. So the fact that this almost happened, I'm like, okay, I guess that's good to know. But I don't feel any twinge of remorse or upsetness that it didn't come to fruition, especially with everything we've learned about Josh Trank since. You know, I think, there's not a huge reason to be too optimistic about how that film would have turned out.
Kelvin, did you know about this already?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said, I think, in last week's podcast, where it was supposed to be Boba Fett and then Han Solo, and then their whole background. It was supposed to be some sort of a Western. And for some reason, they just went ahead with the Han Solo instead of Boba Fett, which, you know, I guess Han Solo is more of a, you know, an icon character.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never been one of those people either who loves him. Like, I think I remember really liking his outfit and thought he was cool. But then when he died in Return of the Jedi in that jokey manner, I was just like, oh, well, fuck that guy. He sucks. And then
Yeah, me too. Exactly. Yeah, I don't know.
So, yeah, I never...
I think they wanted to focus on, like, the rivalry between the both of them.
Which would have been cool. I would have been on board for that movie, but, you know, it is what it is. What would you be on board with him showing up in Han Solo?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be actually if they decided to kind of merge the movies together, because we still don't really know what the movie's going to be about completely. We've heard rumors, and who knows how they could incorporate Boba Fett into the plot. You know, I could get on board with that, but at the same time, I really don't give a fuck about Boba Fett. I'm not one of those people. I'm like Mario. I don't care about every sentence that has been mentioned regarding the past getting analyzed and thrown onto the big screen. Ugh. I just hate... Yeah. That's like, I do not like, I hate it in sequels when they have constant callbacks to stuff. I'm like, I don't think, you know, when I'm living life, I have constant callbacks to earlier moments in my life. I just don't do that. Like, that's not a thing that happens in real life. And I think it's contrived and silly when it's forced into movies. Like, let these movies kind of be their own thing and not rely too heavily on stuff that came before. It's just, ugh. I don't like
it. Well, you know what I have heard about the Han Solo film is that you probably will see a young, still fat Jabba the Hutt.
Well, he was young and fat in episode one.
Yeah, so he'll probably be Han Solo as well.
That guy never changes. He's always a fat slug, and he always talks in a language that kind of sounds like English, but then not really.
Yeah.
That's true, bro.
So moving on. Any last words about Boba Fett almost happening? I just find the whole story with Josh Trank infinitely interesting, and I'm waiting for a movie one day that is going to pick apart that whole Fantastic Four / Star Wars fiasco, get the real deal behind that $100,000 of damage done by his dogs at the hotel, whatever that shit was, his behavior on set, and how that affected the movie itself, what the studio interference was actually like. I want everything. I want to know everything. And
no, absolutely. I would love to know everything, but my boy who was attached to it as well, Simon Kinberg, who was writing the film, I think he still did. Won't comment on it.
Fantastic Four, you mean?
No, the Boba Fett.
Ah, he won't comment on it,
because him and Josh were attached to that film.
Yeah. Simon Kinberg. I think people are talking about how he was the reason why they pulled out of the Star Wars one because of his experience with him on Fantastic Four, right?
Yeah.
Is that the rumor? I'm not sure if he commented on that ever, but...
No, he would never comment on that, you know?
Yeah. So that's unfortunate, but maybe in 20 years we'll get that long-awaited book. Maybe Mario will write it.
Yeah, when I'm done with my DCEU book, motherfucker.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I think the Fantastic Four Boba Fett scandal would be a much more interesting topic, but that's for another discussion. That's just a personal thought. So we're done with Star Wars, believe it or not. Completely done with Star Wars. We're moving on to a couple trailers. The first is kind of a smaller one from the CW. It is not a DC CW show. Actually, this is something I just threw on kind of for fun because I am – really interested in this project, Riverdale, which is an adaptation of the Archie comics. That is right. The CW is adapting the Archie comics into a TV show. You know, the most boring, wholesome, personality-less comic book known to man is getting an adaptation. But it's not necessarily going to be the adaptation that I expected at first. I was like, what a piece of shit. Who's going to watch this? I don't understand. It turns out they're going to be using that wholesome idea, that wholesome style, against it. So pretty much it's going to be like this cheery, over-the-top, ridiculously wholesome town. But underneath, there's like I don't know if there's a murder mystery, but a dark undertone that is very creepy, kind of in the vein of Twin Peaks. If you've watched that, it's like this nice town, but something sinister lurks beneath the surface. And they had a trailer that dropped yesterday, I think it was, and... it looks kind of cool. What did you think of this, Mario?
I'm just like, what the fuck?
Exactly.
To me, the whole thing is like, what the fuck is going on right now? I watched the trailer. I mean, A, I'm like, why is this happening? But B, I'm watching it and I'm just like, what am I looking at? Like, what does this have to do with Archie? Why are they adapting Archie? And if you're going to make this... like, why is this the direction you're going with it? So that's not to say that it looks bad or whatever. It looks like a fucking CW show. I don't watch any CW shows, but it looks like, you know, it fits in line with their general level of quality, which is fine. But it's just a big what the fuck. I just don't know who looked at those old fashioned corny comics and decided this is what has to happen with it. But hey, you know, I all the power to them. If this becomes a hit, it just shows how out of touch I am with basically the rest of the planet Earth.
Kelvin,
I mean, the trailer didn't really show you much. It reminded, you know, so you really don't know what's it about. But I get what Jamma was saying, like murder mystery type of thing. Sort of those little clips here and there reminded me of Friday Night Lights, like they're all high school kids and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not really sold on it at all. So, you know,
I just think I just love the fact because when I think of Archie comics, I roll my eyes like, fuck this thing. Like this, I don't care about this at all. But then when you're literally making the plot, it's almost like you're using the license against type for it. It's just like, well, yeah, you know that. But then here's what's really going on. Here's how creepy it would be if people actually were that wholesome in real life. And like, you know, some crazy conniving shit would be going on behind the scenes. And I just appreciate the person who said, let's do that idea. And they actually followed through with it. And I really want to see what it's like. I'm also a big fan of Twin Peaks, which is, you know, I keep mentioning that. But it's really a genuinely weird show. And everyone acts really strange for no reason at all. And you're like, people in the show are fucking weird. And I'm kind of expecting that same thing where it's like, why are you acting like that? Who acts like that? And like maybe it's an outsider comes in and it's pretty much the audience being like, there's something weird going on here and I want to know what it is. And yeah, I'm interested to see how that works out for them.
Yeah, so I think I would be – go ahead, Kel.
No. I'm saying I never read the comics, so that's why I never even – cared about this. This is one of those comic books. When you go to the comic book store, you pass by, you see the big headline says Archie Redhead, and you keep going.
And you keep going, like, who the fuck is reading these comics? Who is reading them?
Exactly. I'm like, who the fuck?
How have they been around for so long? I actually pulled one off the shelf the other day. I was at the store, and I was like, who is reading this shit? Like, they have those giant 500 page mammoth editions, and I'd never seen anyone buy them. I have never seen anyone pick them up and read them. I'm pretty sure that this is like a government-sustained magazine that is just there because it always has been, and that no one actually cares about these characters.
Yeah. I think I honestly would be a little more interested if they kept it like a period piece, like, you know, like the set in the era when the Archie comics first came out. If it was like 1950s, I think I would actually care a little bit more. Hmm. But to me, this just looks like another one of these CW Gossip Girl type shows with a little murder mystery baked.
Well, I actually,
to me, it would be creepier if it was like actually 50s with the guys in the varsity jackets and everyone is supposedly so wholesome and, you know, then there's the dark underbelly.
I think maybe it's a bit more unsettling that it's modern day, where it's like, who fucking acts like this these days? Like, this isn't the 50s and it's modern day. Like, why is everyone acting so weird? So anyway, yeah. Anyways, I think my enthusiasm is probably disproportionate to the quality of the show, what it will end up being. But you can count me as intrigued, and I will be watching this come January 26th of next year.
All right.
So you can count on that.
You hear that, CW? You've got one.
You've got one. But I'm not sure how many people are as weird as me and like things as ironically as I do a lot of times. So there's that.
There's only one jammer.
Only one. Moving on to our last story. Martin Scorsese, his new film, which has been, I wouldn't say been hitting headlines a lot, but I know there was kind of controversy, question marks surrounding it, in that they didn't know when it was getting a release date. It was like 3 hours long, and then it was cut down because it was too long, and people weren't sure if it was going to make the cut for Oscars, and was this, should we be worried? But yes, it turns out it will be hitting, you know, some theaters, just enough theaters to get that Oscar qualification. And they also just released a new trailer. I will turn this to you first, Mario. What did you think of this new trailer of the movie starring Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver and other people?
It didn't really interest me. I mean, it looks like a beautiful film, like a finely made film. But there was nothing really about the premise that drew me.
Yeah.
You know, visually speaking, like I said, it looks like, you know, this is definitely made of the highest caliber. You've got great actors. You've got a great director, great cinematography. The look and feel looks very good. But I sound like a simpleton. It looks good. But the premise, I'm just kind of like, that's not necessarily a journey I'm interested in taking. And something that just struck me, and this is just, you know, maybe this is just me being difficult, but I was struck by the fact that these guys are playing characters named like Ferreira and Francisco and Guerres and all this sort of stuff. And it's just a bunch of white guys. And that doesn't bother me at all. But I'm just curious about the fact that, like, there's always this, like, race, like, you know, race politics and controversy when people play, like, when characters get, quote unquote, whitewashed or white people take, you know, the minority characters and play them and blah, blah, blah. And I just wonder, why haven't I heard a whiff of that surrounding this? Is it because it's Martin Scorsese and people just respect him too much to come to him with that sort of political correct stuff? Or is it because, you know, no one really cares if it's a Latino that's getting recast as a white guy? If it's like, this might be a total distraction that I'm bringing up that has nothing to do with the core conversation we're going to have. But I was struck by that, listening to their accents and listening to the names that they were that of these characters. I'm like, so they hired a bunch of just British and Scottish white guys to play seemingly Spanish characters. Why doesn't anyone care about that? I don't. But where are all the PC warriors who typically would be like, this is not fair. These should be men of color.
I have two possibilities. One, I think people may just not know, because if you see images of it, it looks like it's typical white missionary goes to other place that's not Christian. Mm-hmm. So maybe they just don't realize it. Secondly, people could argue that Spanish people are white.
That's true, but why? But you couldn't find Latin actors.
Oh, no, I'm with you. But I understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying that could be the,
but you think that's why it flew under the radar?
Yeah, because, yeah.
You know, like a lot of like Spanish people are, you know, white skinned.
And as you said before, like also to pile onto that is that a lot of Latinos don't really give a fuck either. They're not raising a stink about it.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, yeah, that's been my thesis for a long time, but we don't really get involved with that shit. You know, and that's just what, yeah, and that's what struck me, because it sounds like Garfield is trying to put on some form of Spanish accent if you listen to it, not Spanish from Spain, or a Hispanic accent of sorts, and even Driver is also, and I'm just like, that's what threw it, was a red flag for me. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, are these guys playing Hispanic characters and no one gives a fuck? I mean, I don't give a fuck, but where are the warriors? Where are they?
No, but would it matter to you that this is based on Endo's novel, right? So does it matter that these two priests or missionaries are Portuguese?
So they are. Is that what they are? They're Portuguese?
They're Portuguese, yeah. In the book, they're Portuguese.
Okay, yeah. So I didn't
I guess that's why they're not Latinos. Portuguese,
but,
but
Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver.
Absolutely. I get definitely, it. I totally get it. It's like seeing,
yeah, like they couldn't get fucking Diego Luna and Gael Garcia Bernal, or any Diego Luna. Did I say him already?
Yeah,
because there's only like three of them. So, you know.
Yeah.
But like they could, yeah, Antonio Banderas. Like they couldn't get some actual Latin talent to play these Portuguese guys because South American people. But anyway, I digress.
No, I mean, that's a good
point. No, I get you, bro, because it's the same feeling that I get when you have, like, Cliff Curtis playing Pablo Escobar in Blow. Like, really? You get a fucking New Zealand to play a Colombian drug lord?
He's played everything, though. He's played everything.
Smiley. Remember Smiley?
Everything. He looks like everything. He could be from anywhere.
Yep. So does that bother you at all, Kelvin?
Not really. It does and it doesn't. Like what Mario said, he looks like everybody. Cliff Curtis, when he played Pablo Escobar, I was like, really? You couldn't get anybody else? You know? You couldn't get like a Javier Bardem to play him? Mm-hmm. You know? But it doesn't really bother.
So it does bother you.
Like the other one, too. It didn't bother anybody, but they were trying to make a stink of it when Ben Affleck played the Latino guy in Argo.
Tony Mendez or whatever the character.
Tony Mendez, yeah, the CIA guy. I mean, like, they started to complain, but, you know, it didn't escalate to that level where, you know, oh, my God, you're whitewashing with the Asians and stuff like that.
I just find it interesting that, like, there was such an uproar about this Ghost in the Shell stuff.
When it comes to the Asian stuff?
Yeah.
But when it comes
and there was such an uproar about the Ancient One, and there's always like a lot to be said when a black character is turned white or a white character is turned black. But when it comes to Hispanic characters and Hispanic actors, you don't really hear that same thing. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I just think it's something worth noting.
I mean, I think maybe there are several factors into that. I feel like we don't necessarily have the same negative history that blacks do in America. That's one thing. I think, I feel like just a lot of Latinos are just too busy focusing on their own personal lives to care. I mean, not that like other people, you know, have all this time to spare, but yeah, I don't know. It's just a different culture, different idea of just putting your head down and doing your work and eventually things will come. As opposed to,
that's my outlook too, yeah.
As opposed to sort of, fixing the system.
Yeah.
Yo.
So anyway, this whole thing just sort of lends itself to my overall thesis of the last 2 years.
Come on, Mary, let's go.
Fuck that.
This movie's not going to make very much money anyway.
I don't give a fuck.
This movie is going to make...
Didn't that remind you of the trailer of The Revenant? I'm like, yo, am I seeing The Revenant in Japan now?
No, it reminded me of The Mission, that old movie from like the
80s. Yeah.
And I remember being bored as fuck watching that one. Oh my God. I hated that movie so much. I don't know how I feel about this because, great movie, great actors. It looks like a well-made movie, but I'm not sure I'm interested in this. It just looks like boring, misty, slow.
The premise.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do it for me. I mean, not that I think it's going to be the same quality. It looks like it's probably going to be much better. But I felt the same way, even when The Monuments Men was coming out with George Clooney. Like, I like the cast. I like George Clooney as a director. I like a lot of the elements. I just don't necessarily give a crap about this storyline. So, it's similar to me with Silence. Like, all right, good for you. But the story itself doesn't necessarily have a very wide appeal, I don't think.
Oh. And it probably will get nominated for Oscars for Best Director, Best Picture, Best Visual, but because it's Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. I mean, the thing also, going back to the race thing really quick, I think also the fact this movie is getting – no one knows what it is. No one outside of the film community knows this movie exists, whereas Ghost in the Shell is more of a public – thing. More people know what it is. People understand what it is. Same with many other things. Marvel movie. I guess it's hard to compare the public awareness of a Marvel movie compared to some movie that Martin Scorsese had a hard time making in the first place.
And that's the thing. Like, I can totally see why he got a hard time making this. You know what? Why that he couldn't find someone to finance it for a bit.
Maybe that's why he had to do with this. Maybe that's why he had to put some names in there. That, you know, people
recognize. Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah. That's probably it. Like, all right, well, I'll get the guy who played Spider-Man, and I'll get Kylo Ren, and I'll get Qui-Gon Jinn, and now can I make the movie?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, well, I think we just solved the reasoning behind everything, so there you go. Yeah. As sad as it is, that's, you know, studios, they have an investment, and they want to make sure that investment is secure, and they're not going to lose money on it. In order to do that, you know, getting some noticeable actors in there certainly helps a bit, but I think it helps a lot less these days than a lot of studios expect. I don't think name brand is a huge thing these days, or actors, and they're pulling theater people to the theaters. I just don't think happens anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So last but not least, are you guys checking out anything new these days, be it on movies, TV, anything?
Well, Kelvin. This is where I got okay, go ahead, Kelvin.
No, I mean, movie-wise, I only saw, like I said, Lion. TV, I'm still watching the same stuff. And I tried caught up to Supergirl.
How's that treating you?
I saw yesterday's, you know, because it's a four, you know, the crossover. I don't know about Supergirl. I wonder if they're going to renew it for a third season.
I think they already did, actually.
Okay. Well, they got to work on those fucking stories.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Supergirl for me, it's been consistently kind of just above mediocre, but not much. Yeah. It's kind of just, it's safe. It's very safe. It doesn't really. I want it to do more than it is, but it's still entertaining enough for me to go like, yeah, sure. If you're into Supergirl, I don't think it's bad. So I don't think it's bad. So.
Yeah. I mean, I try to catch up with all the stuff that I. You know, missed Gotham. I saw a couple of episodes only because the whole Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah,
I had a chance to catch up on stuff because a lot of these other shows that kept, you know, they took 2 weeks off. So I'm looking forward to seeing this Friday's episode of The Exorcist, and I finished everything else on Netflix, so I'm good.
Mario, are you still nothing much?
I haven't added anything really, but I have started delving back into an old passion of mine. And it's something it's definitely my guilty pleasure, and it's something that I'm not too proud of speaking about, but we're going to do it. We're going to go for it. When I was, basically from the age of 12 through like 21, I was the biggest, most hardcore professional wrestling fan in the world. I had like almanacs and shit. I like studied it. I ran an online role playing federation.
Oh my god!
Huge. Just yeah. It was bad. It was bad. and you know, and but that all stopped like 12, 13 years ago. But every once in a while, I'll find myself putting on WWE Raw on a Monday night, just like out of old habits, die hard. And these last couple weeks, I've actually been putting it on because Bill Goldberg is back, and he's feuding with Brock Lesnar. So that's actually kind of brought me back into the fold of wrestling a little bit, just to kind of see where the product is at these days and how they're handling these like older stars like Goldberg and Lesnar. So I will say I've been checking that out. Don't think ill of me. It sucks for sure, but if we're being honest, that is something that I've been paying more attention to the last couple weeks.
It's funny because I haven't watched wrestling since my kids grew up. I mean, I took them. I'm proud to say I took both of them to WrestleMania twice.
Nice,
you know. But I haven't watched wrestling ever since they just said, "Ah, the hell with this," because their main guy was that their main guy was either John Cena or Mysterio. Was that Mysterio? Was that his name?
Yeah, Rey Mysterio Jr.
Rey Mysterio. They loved his yeah. finishing move.
The 619.
Yeah, 619.
I haven't watched wrestling since I was like 10 or 11, and I'm sure you guys will know, or at least Mario will know, the exact era I'm talking about. The last thing I remember happening in the plot of professional wrestling was when Triple H was betrayed by Stephanie McMahon.
Dang!
That was when I last watched wrestling, and I used to watch it a lot back then. Like every whatever things they had, like three or four shows they had a week, I watched all of them. Yeah. And then
I think they still have it, three or four shows a week, Mario?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because there were the two federations. So you had WWF with Raw and SmackDown, and you had WCW with Nitro and Thunder.
And I did not watch WCW. I watched WWF.
Yeah, neither did I. I only watched SmackDown or WWE, you know, Raw.
Yeah, see, I was always a WWF lifer, but then WCW got really smart in like 97, and they had the NWO, which was like a really huge angle that actually crossed over into like mainstream pop culture, where they had guys from WWF basically jumping ship and playing their WWF characters and basically implying that they're still working for Vince McMahon, but that they're there to invade WCW. It was a very cool storyline that they actually stole from Japan wrestling.
And I remember
anyway.
The video game, the WCW NWO Revenge.
Yeah, that was damn good.
Yeah. I played all the wrestling games. Those were awesome back in like N64 days.
Yeah, dude.
Damn.
WWF WrestleMania 2000, No Mercy was, to this day, WWF No Mercy for N64 is like the best wrestling game that's ever been made. I have to say that. And for those of you who are listening, who are wrestling fans, I know one of the big topics was, you know, a week and a half ago at Survivor Series, Goldberg squashed Lesnar. You know, Goldberg came out of retirement and he beat Lesnar with only three moves in like under a minute and a half. And it was a big controversial thing. Should they have done that? Lesnar's been built up as a monster. And now they have Goldberg, a part-timer who's 48 years old and hasn't wrestled in 12 years, basically came out and beat him. I actually loved the fuck out of that, but I'm not going to eat up too much more time on this podcast with that. If you'd like to engage me about the Survivor Series outcome, you can find me on Twitter, I_AM_MFR. I am MFR, and we can discuss wrestling.
Well, while we're talking about guilty pleasures, there was a new guilty pleasure that was incited this week. Do you think any of you can guess? What has come out recently that you think would incite a guilty pleasure? I'll give you a hint. It's Netflix related.
Gilmore Girls?
Gilmore Girls. This is a show that, like, I watched it, you know, whenever – I kind of watched it. Like, it was on TV. I would watch it just because I thought it was funny. It was a funny show. And, you know, it was pretty well written, even though it basically followed a bunch of overprivileged white girls. You know, that's basically was the premise of the show. And the revival came on Netflix. And we've been watching that, and it's surprisingly good. Like, once again, the writing is still sharp and witty and all that, and it's still – if you didn't like the show before, you're not going to like it now. But I've been getting a lot of enjoyment out of it. They've had four episodes, each of them an hour and a half long, and I made it through three of them so far. And I will definitely be finishing the fourth.
Oh, so it's only four episodes?
It's 4 hour and a half long episodes, yes.
Okay.
But it is interesting to see because this really gives them a lot of opportunity to breathe. Like in the third episode, you literally spend probably 20 minutes watching a really bad play on stage to completion and just the character's reaction to how bad it is. And I'm like, wow, they're really indulging in this for a really long time. And I couldn't decide whether or not I liked it or I didn't because it was definitely – there was like no point to it. But it allows them to indulge in those types of things, which I think is kind of creatively cool. And it's kind of inspired me to go back and actually watch the show from the beginning in order. So I will be watching the entire series, which I had never done before. I'd only just kind of catch it on TV every now and then. So, yeah, I guess you can call me a Gilmore Girls fan now. Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing.
All right. That's a thing.
Yeah, and I'm also watching House of Cards. I mentioned that last week. I'm almost done with the first season. Damn, that is a good fucking show. I'm really,
oh yeah.
I'm so happy that I waited. Now I have like four seasons to enjoy of this thing. So I have weeks of entertainment. I'm good.
So, all right, good.
How about Westworld?
I will wait for the season to end. I'm waiting for the season to end.
That yeah, shit is good.
Pissed. Aaron Varola, if you're listening, you know, he pitched to us on Twitter that he would love, after we've all finished Westworld season one, to basically have an entire Westworld discussion on the podcast.
Oh, I'd be on board for that.
I've been watching the whole thing.
Episodes behind. I think it just wrapped up on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken.
This Sunday that's coming up is an hour and a half
this
long.
This Sunday? Okay. Yeah.
It's the season finale.
Okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to get my ass in gear and actually start watching it and put House of Cards on hold so for the coming week and a half so we could discuss it.
Yeah, yeah. One last thing before we let you guys go. This is actually kind of swerving back towards movie news, which we sort of left. But this is one of my little left, my little left turns that I didn't warn you guys about. There's an interesting fan theory going on right now with the new Power Rangers movie that I wanted to run by you guys and see what you think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You wrote about that today.
Yeah, because it's going around and it's actually got people excited. It's one of those where, like, you kind of hope this fan theory is true, because if it isn't, it's actually going to be disappointing if it's not. Which is, when they released that picture of Elizabeth Banks as Rita Repulsa yesterday, she's holding up the staff with this green emblem at the end of it. And a lot of very astute fans noted that the emblem looks kind of like the power coins in this movie. And the power coins are the things that each ranger gets that transforms them into a Power Ranger. It bestows them, you know, with their powers and gives them access to the Zords and so on and so forth. So some people, they've gone two ways with this observation. Some people have said simply that it looks like in the movie they're going to revisit the idea of Rita creating a Green Ranger to fight the Power Rangers, which is what happened in the TV show where, you know, when Tommy first premiered and the Green Ranger first premiered, he was a henchman, a very powerful henchman to Rita Repulsa. So some people simply think that, you know, that Green Ranger is going to factor into the movie and that he's going to be a baddie at first that comes from Rita Repulsa. Other people noted that her costume being all green and being all tattered and looking the way it is and being such a big departure from how Rita Repulsa has always been depicted, somebody went off in an interesting direction and said, what if she was the Green Ranger a very long time ago? Because it says she's been locked away for eons. So the general idea is, during another incarnation of the Power Rangers, she may have been a Green Ranger. She had a rift with Zordon about something, and he ended up imprisoning her. And that's why when this movie happens, she breaks out and she's got a bone to pick with Zordon, and he has to get the Power Rangers together and so on and so forth. So so it's basically like a two-part theory. One, that she's going to create a Green Ranger, and one, that she actually was the Green Ranger at one point or another. And that's why her costume somewhat resembles a Power Ranger costume, just sort of ripped up, and that's why it's all green. What do you motherfuckers think of that?
I fucking love this theory. This is an awesome theory. Yeah, if you look at the suit, that new photo of her, if you just imagine that suit not ripped up and complete, it's like she just has an old suit that she continues to wear and has ripped it up in combat however she's been fighting. I think I recall this theory actually circling when she was first revealed in general, just that might be the case. But it definitely seems to have been bolstered by this new image of her. And whoa, plot twist. Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, I'm on board. I want it so bad. I want it.
Yeah, that would be really good. It's one of those where we're like, fuck, I hope it really is a thing.
Yeah, if it's not a thing, it will be disappointing. It will suck.
Yeah.
But I also think it's important. It's great just because it seems to add a potential lot of weight to Rita Repulsa as a character, because she has a past. She has a history. There's going to be a through line. There's going to be, you know, an added ranger to the group potentially. It's going to be – I don't know. There's just a lot of potential here for some – real amazing emotional weight to the whole thing that I did not expect. Not at all.
Could even almost help. So go ahead.
No, I was going to change it slightly, but continue.
No, it could even almost help introduce one of the interesting elements from that Power Ranger fan film that came out last year from that friend of ours, Adi Shankar, mm-hmm. when he produced that fan film that basically toyed with the idea of, like, it's kind of fucked up having these children soldiers, these teenagers, and having them fight these battles, and what sort of ramifications happens to them. you know, and that movie took it in a very twisted, violent sort of direction. But her, like, you know, she could have a beef with Zordon about she was a teenager when she was recruited to do this, and you know, look how she turned out. You know, it's it fucked up. You know, it fucked up her psyche. It fucked up her expectations. It fuck, you know, it warped her as a person fundamentally, which is why she hates Zordon for what he did. And now, you know, he has to try not to repeat those mistakes with the new breed of Rangers and whatever. Like, it could almost bring that very sort of mature idea from the fan film into the reboot.
Yeah, and it keeps her from being just an evil villain to someone with actual motivations that you could potentially get on board with. It's like, yeah, Zordon, why are you getting a bunch of teenagers?
I was a 15-year-old girl, and you recruited me for this thing, and I lost my childhood, and I, you know, I saw atrocities that are nightmares to this day. Like, it would definitely make for a pretty interesting conflict.
Oh, I love it, Kelvin. What do you think?
I like the theory. I like the idea. I mean, you know, sort of some sort of like revenge type of thing. But I've really never watched any kind of episode of Power Rangers. So,
all right, yeah, I forget you're like old and shit.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm old school.
You're older than the podcast.
Talk to me about Voltron and shit like that, you know. I'll tell you about that. But, you know, I do like that, you know, like sort of like, you know, she was a Green Ranger or whatnot, and then she comes back for revenge and stuff like that.
Cool. Sounds,
you know, it's a great story, and it definitely, definitely gives it the potential to rise above that 90s movie, which, by the way, if you're an HBO Now subscriber, it is on HBO Now, the original Power Rangers movie, which I checked out recently again for the first time in since college. And God, what a piece of shit that movie is. That movie's awful.
I haven't seen it since it came out.
It's embarrassing. I was by myself watching it, and I was embarrassed. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? What's going on? Yeah, even Ivan Ooze, who is lovably campy in the movie, he was just like, the best part of the movie, the fact that he's the best part of the movie is embarrassing. Yeah. So, it's a bad movie.
Ouch.
It's bad.
Ouch. There was Jammer's retro review of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie.
Yeah, it's really bad. So you can check it out if that's your type of thing. Make a drinking movie to it. Every single time there's a sound effect, or maybe every single time someone says a cheesy line, every single time you cringe, there's lots of potential there.
But you know what I had? I might have mentioned this on an earlier podcast. I'm not sure. I had the fucking audio cassette of the soundtrack back in the day, and that shit lived in my Walkman for a while.
Was it the soundtrack? Was it like the had the Van Halen song in it? And
it had Red Hot Chili Peppers. It had like Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, fucking Higher Ground. Like, it actually had some good music on it. So I used to listen to that fucking Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie soundtrack like all the time.
Yeah, it had a pretty good soundtrack.
I know a lot of the words, so like a lot of even the terrible songs.
Action like Boy Now, Action Girl Now, that one.
Oh my God, yeah, and there's also that one by a band called Shampoo.
Oh God,
what the hell
does
it
go?
That's
so 90s.
Yeah, oh, I forget how it goes now, but it's so fucking annoying. And they even had fucking Kung Fu Dancing, which was a terrible song. Hang on, I'm trying to remember what the fucking Shampoo song was. This is so pathetic. Trouble.
That fucking song. Yeah.
That was a terrible fucking song, but I was obsessed with that soundtrack. I have to be honest with myself and with you, our listeners.
Yeah.
But okay, let's bring this 40th edition of Lost Fanboys home. What do you say, boys?
Let's do it.
All right, so let's first remind everyone what the question of the week was.
The question the question of the week is, do you think that Star Wars Episode 8 should have its trailer premiere during Rogue One? Do you think it should be attached to Rogue One, or should it be after?
Yes.
Okay.
And in the meantime, please take the time to write us a review. We're continuing to try to build up on all of our 5 stars and kind words so that the podcast can continue to grow. We're actually working on trying to get some interesting guests on the podcast, some interesting folks from some of your favorite projects. And obviously, the bigger and better the podcast is, the more appealing we are to people that we're reaching out towards. So, you know, you help us out and we'll help you out with some interesting talent on Los Fanboys.
Scratch our back, we'll give you a hand job.
Holy shit.
Holy shit.
I mean, I imagine you moisturize. Anyway, we'll be back next week. Hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving, by the way. And thanks for checking out the podcast. Continue to visit LRMonline.com for all the latest info and rumors on your favorite fanboy topics. We will see you next week.
Peace out.
Later.